I think I work really, really fast. I don't think about it. And that's what I love about it, because it's like me play the piano. It's meditation. Your head should clear of everything. If you've got problems, you've got to pay bills or whatever, it's completely gone. But the process of, I'm rambling now, but the process of writing songs is, the music I find really easy, but the words, I can be singing 50 times, one take or one sentence, and then you're pulling your nails out. You know, it's and then you think, but you know it's good enough and you want to carry on and do it. So I rarely get to that phase where I think, oh, fuck it, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I do push through, and that's where the hard work is, I think, the only bit of hard work. The rest of it's pleasure.
Hello, and welcome to episode 39 of Attention Engineer. Kid, a music producer, songwriter, and solo artist making music as Penfriend, and beaming into your ears from my studio, The Launchpad, in Bristol. You can find me around the internet at Penfriend Rocks. Come and say hi. Thanks for joining me today as I continue my mission to encourage creativity in every listener by sharing conversations with some of the artists I admire the most. This podcast is made possible by the Correspondence Club. Love and thanks to every member. From the freshly decorated surroundings of the Launchpad, hello to you, and thanks for tuning in. My loft window is open, the birds are singing, and nearby, a neighbour is mowing their lawn. How lovely. I'm very pleased to bring you this new conversation, recorded just a few days ago. I was absolutely delighted to get to support Baby Bird on tour around the UK in 2018. And of course, exactly as it always happens, there was never really time for a proper chat. You'll hear soon enough how much of an impact Stephen's work has had on me over the years as a songwriter. So suffice to say, this was a dream conversation for me. Million-selling songwriter and cult hero Stephen Jones has spent the last decade reconnecting with his DIY roots, exploring new styles and approaches with self-recorded and self-released music. Independence has allowed him to dig deeper creatively, taking more risks without having to worry about commercial expectations. These projects also breathe new life into his band Baby Bird, reborn in 2015 as a completely self-sufficient musical enterprise. Along with the gold discs, millions of sales, a string of top 40 hits, two Brit Award nominations, critical acclaim and a dedicated cult following, Baby Bird has also survived the curse and repercussions of a smash hit single, cringe-inducing endorsements from members of the royal family, issues with record labels, huge changes in the music industry, and even a heart attack. Stephen Jones remains dedicated to his cause and has recently been making some of the best music of his career, over 20 years after his commercial peak. Meanwhile, people are still listening to albums such as Ugly Beautiful and the fan favourite There's Something Going On, decades after their release. Long considered to be one of the most gifted and underrated songwriters in British music, he's one of a group of artists who have inspired me greatly over the years. We talked about the importance of making music that's for you first, the strange and inappropriate uses of You're Gorgeous in pop culture from Prince William to Barack Obama, how Bandcamp is the best internet version of DIY, and the awkward glamour and excitement of making a $1 million music video with Hollywood royalty. I'm delighted to say we have another sponsor today, so massive thanks to James Everett for supporting the making of this episode with his contribution. This show is ad-free on purpose, but I do welcome sponsorship from listeners, and there are a few ways of getting involved, detailed over at penfriend.rocks/sponsorship. Thank you, James. Right, here's my conversation with Stephen Jones.
I don't do Zoom or anything. I think all my business is done on phone calls. So.
Yeah, I really don't like the Zoom thing. I don't know why. It's not like I hate my face or anything, but I just find it to be a bit like we never used to have to like talk to each other face to face all the time. Phones are fine.
Yeah, no, totally. You feel like you're focused on that little circle on the top of your computer.
Have you ever kept a track of how many bajillion press phone call things you did in the days of doing those things pre internet.
No, I probably regret that because I listen to a lot of diaries. I listen to Michael Palin's diaries and various people. And I really wish I'd done that, but I haven't. I've just got the big yellow box of magazines and newspapers, and that's it. In terms of doing, I've got the odd cassette. It's all on cassette. So if I've done a Mark Radcliffe thing or a Johnny Walker, it's on cassette and it'll have a date. But the way I keep things and the way I work is so fast. I just shove it in a box and it's gone. And I'll find it, you know, in 3 or 4 years. So it's odd. I regret that, definitely.
Do you keep a diary?
No, that's what I was saying. No, I don't. I really wish that I'd done that.
Yeah.
Because I think as you get older, you really would like to go back and pinpoint, you know, those various things. I kept a diary when I was about 6 years old because we went to New Zealand on a on a boat. So we went all the way to New Zealand. So I kept a diary, but it's just pictures of Daffy Duck and
Walt Disney
going, yeah, but that's it. There's a few words that I've scrawled, but there's no information. They're just stupid cartoons.
You ever thought of publishing that and like making a big deal? This obviously will ruin it, but in the run-up, just be like, you know, never before seen diary of Stephen Jones, and then it's just that.
Yeah, no, I've got all that, and I've got this blue book from my school when I was 13, and how appalling I was. It was like 11% in history, and he'll never make anything of anything he ever does. Those kind of comments. And music was probably the worst, you know.
Really.
The worst. Amazing. I did at school. Yeah. I was forced to do the flute. So.
Oh, wow.
I think an instrument out the side just belittles you in front of your friends, really. So I'd rather the saxophone or something, but I was forced. I don't know why I chose the flute. Very weird.
Did you choose it then, or were you forced? Because I was forced to play violin.
Oh, well, violin's brilliant, though. Do you still play it?
No, but it's a gorgeous instrument, but not when you're seven.
No.
It sounded horrific.
Yeah. Well, it's the classic joke, isn't it, that you're strangling a cat with a violin. But no, flute was, I seem to do it, I don't remember choosing it. I do remember hyperventilating when I was learning to do it. And it was part of this orchestra. And I fell through the all the music stands. It was like a domino thing in front of the whole orchestra. And from that point on, I was second flute. And I used to pretend... Because first flute in the school orchestra would play and I would just go, not do it. And I did that for 8 years. So how mental is that? 8 years on the flute. I didn't go in for one exam. Pathetic.
Wow. It's like a performance art piece, really.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's all it was.
Because you needn't have bothered going because you weren't contributing to the sound.
But exactly.
You brought something else to it.
Yeah, well, I don't know what I brought, really. Just it filled up an empty seat.
Standing. You brought some standing and sitting.
Yeah.
Well, but look, before we get too far into our chat, could you introduce yourself, please, to the listeners?
Yes, my name's Stephen Jones, and I was partly responsible for Baby Bird, which started around 1994-ish. There you go.
There you go, that's it.
Yeah.
And also the flute thing. Let's not forget the flute thing.
Oh, and the flute, yes, which is way, when I look back on my whole career, the flute is the standout.
I've been trying to charm you into being on this podcast for a while, as you're very aware.
I know, I'm terrible. Yeah, yeah.
No, don't apologise. I'm so pleased that we're talking now. I wanted to tell you why, though, because you might not know why I wanted to talk to you. One of the things is that I find your work ethic just so staggering and so inspiring.
Thank you.
Because I'm someone who wants to make music for my whole life. Yeah. And just I've always known that that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so when I look at someone like you who has had the sort of success that most artists can only dream of, but despite that has also created a life of making music and like gone on from there to create something bigger than that, to me bigger than that, I just find that really inspiring. And you continue to produce album after album. And you're a real grafter, and that's the kind of thing I just really respect in other artists. So that's why I wanted to talk to you.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's very kind of you.
It's not for you to explain that one song to me, which probably is quite a lot of the reason most people ask you to do things.
The flute one.
Yeah, the flute one. Yeah. Something about being really pretty.
Oh, yes, that's right. You're beautiful, as it's been called in numerous things. I think that's, can I talk about, that's it's really kind of you. And it's like, but the most important thing is that I know, because you say you've loved music forever and that's, you know what you want to do. And that's what I've I don't think I'm the same. I just think I kind of stumbles through a lot of things. I've always liked music, obviously, ever since I saw Joy Division and even the Bay City Rollers. I knew I liked music because some people don't.
Yeah.
Some people don't like music, which I find very odd. But I think the fact is when I'm 70, 80, I will still be able to sit at a piano and my attitude hasn't changed. I'm doing it for me first. I'd love people to like it, but you need to make money and that's all the complicated stuff. But I just know that as I go on, it'll always be, the piano will always be a friend.
Yeah.
Straight. And that's how I started when I was really, really young. My dad never forced me to do anything unless he did the flute, unless I find out he did force me to do that. I don't know. But there was always a piano in the corner of the room. So you would gravitate towards this piece of furniture that made a noise.
Yeah.
And I've still got that. You know, I wouldn't be without a piano. I could get rid of everything else in the house, apart from the fridge maybe and the flute. And I would go, which I still have actually. And I have a violin, which I still do the kind of Velvet Underground kind of, no, but the Velvet Underground kind of screeching, you know, it's just fantastic.
Oh, they're great for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's it really. So I think my attitude, I think the reason I carry on is because I've been lucky to have had a bit of money to set me up. You need that, you know. If you're going to make a career out of it, you can't be stupid and think, oh, you'd have to do something else.
Yeah.
Which I do think, or every time I wake up, I think maybe, you know, it'll all run out and I do have to do something else. But, you know, things keep you going and that will be the thing. I'm here playing a piece of music and if it comes out, it does. And if it doesn't, you know, it's the same.
Yeah. And so when did the piano become a friend to you first?
Well, forever. Well, like I was saying earlier, I went to New Zealand and we came back when I was around 7. So I think the house, my dad plays the piano and he used to play the church organ and that was incredible. Because the school was huge and, you know, he played this thing and it had huge pipes and everything. It was stunning. So, and he was just like, he would just play, you know, the Lord's Prayer or something really simple. Yeah. He wasn't a great musician. And so the piano was there. It was just there. And, you know, my other siblings didn't go towards the piano so much. So I know it depends on your character and makeup. Mm. It's not like a thing everyone gravitates toward. But it was just there, so I would plunk on that and, you know, plunk. I wouldn't sleep on it, but I would play it. Yeah, so it's just always been there. I don't think I've been without one, you know.
Yeah. We've got one in the kitchen and I was hoping that that would mean that I would just be able to play it. But it just sort of, it does have books on it quite a lot. But we're trying to keep them off so that we actually play it a bit more.
Yeah. So. Well, if you saw my studio, everything is covered, every surface. There's a little sofa in there which is covered in everything, you know, little bits. Not even music based.
Right.
I can see your piano in the background there. It's got stuff on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a red one. That's mine. Yeah. That's exactly mine. So I never get to it.
I'm going through a studio renovation at the moment, which is moving one pile of crap from one place to another and painting the walls behind and then going, it's okay because eventually it's going to be tidy. But I don't really trust a really tidy studio. I'm not trying to make it so tidy that I can't do stuff in it. As soon as you start doing stuff, it's fucked up, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I understand. My studio is in the fourth bedroom and it's known as a hoarder's paradise, really. It looks like that's the one room where everything gets chucked.
Yeah, there's a good quote about how an empty desk is a sign of an empty mind.
Yes.
This isn't about like Instagram, having a beautiful Instagrammable fucking life, is it? It's like, it's about making stuff. So anyway, that could have come out better, but never mind.
the Instagram life is that. That's a constant, you know, with my kids growing up, that's
of course
there all the time. You know, I know life has just changed. And if I say anything about that, I become an old person just like that over a few comments. You can't complain about it, but it's a necessary evil.
Well, that's actually one of the reasons for doing this podcast is because I think people need to know, I mean, because I wish I had known that making stuff is a process. It doesn't just happen. Mm. Like music doesn't come out in one big wodge of sound and it's great and brilliant. Mm. And then suddenly everyone loves it and gives you loads of money for it. There's a lot of stages in between that. And even just, I know, getting over yourself enough to make something is, for me, a continual process. So I was wondering about you, because you create so much music all the time. Do you have any kind of experience of writer's block, the inner critic, that kind of stuff? Are you wrestling with yourself to make music?
Yeah, totally critical. I mean, my dad was like that as well. He would criticize everything he did internally. No, absolutely, all the time. But I wouldn't. This sounds really up your own ass to say. It's. I don't really get writer's block. I just get. Mm-hmm. I can't be asked today.
Yeah.
But that's not because I can't write a song. You know, it's because. That's what I was trying to say, really. It was never to do with money. I think, you know, you loved music before you needed money. So that's what you do. So that attitude really is core to the whole thing. I don't go to write a song because I want it to be out there. Well, maybe, you know, even You're Gorgeous, the song, or You're Beautiful, whatever it's called, is was a 30-minute written in 30 minutes, an afterthought. I had a series of lo-fi albums at the beginning. It didn't even get on that. So it's just complete luck. So when I mean, asking how I work and stuff, it's I can't really give a good answer because I think there's a hell of a lot of luck. The right person has to be in the right office at the right time. We had 2 years of our manager being told to F off, and even Nick, I've probably told this before, but Nick Beggs from Kajagooga was an A&R man, and he said, go away and write some middle eights and don't darken my door ever again. And we kind of got revenge back because then he tried to sign us later on. So it's just a fluke. But, yeah. You know, it was a lot of hard work and luck, and that's a corny, boring thing to say. But, you know, you have to be able to write good songs. And, you know, write good songs. So.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
we both write good songs, so that's you know, if you're writing shit songs, I think a lot of people do actually write shit songs. So there are a lot of uncritical people, aren't there? Never thought of that.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah,
I the whole writer's block thing, I always hesitate to bring it up because I don't really believe in it.
Mm.
Because I think that the feeling of writer's block, I don't know that I've ever experienced it. I definitely have those, like, I can't be asked, or oh, I don't want to, or I procrastinate. But that's not because I've got writer's block. It's because writing is not a comfortable, like, it's not like a fucking party. It's not like from start to finish, you're going, woo, I love making music. This is brilliant. Look at me gliding through life, making this beautiful thing. Aren't I great? It's kind of like bringing up everything from inside you, like the worst bits and the best bits and all that, and then distilling them into something and hoping that it comes together. That's what it's like for me anyway. It's been very interesting. You obviously know my husband, Tim.
Yes.
He's been going through this production, like an online production course for the last 3 weeks, because he writes beautiful songs but has never recorded himself.
Really
beautiful songs. And he wanted me to help him record them. And I just thought, I can't think of anything I want to do less than sit and be someone's unpaid engineer, however much I love him. And I do. And I do support and encourage him. But I can't. I just can't. So I was really hoping he'd learn to record himself, and he's been doing it. And now he finally understands why, like, when I'm recording albums and stuff, I'm quite a lot of the time in a bad mood, or, like, you know, not loving it. Because it's not for me, and also for him, it's not like, like I say, it's not like a fucking holiday. Where you're just having the time of your life. But given that you make so much music, are you writing intentionally, like, most days? And how does that manifest in terms of writing at home, being with your family, maybe being in a bad mood?
But you're saying about a holiday. I think when you're listening back to a song, you know, is you're really happy with, that's your holiday, isn't it?
Yes.
I think I work really, really fast. I don't think about it. And that's what I love about it, because it's like me play the piano. It's meditation. Your head should clear of everything. If you've got problems, you've got to pay bills or whatever, it's completely gone.
Yeah.
So it's the only meditation I do. I'm not much of an exercise. Well, I have to be, because, you know, I have to keep fit. But it's just I can't put my finger on it or explain it. I think it's just really I go in there and I write stuff. And I'm lucky that I've got a load of stuff that's been there forever, so I can always go into my with Tim as well. Does he use GarageBand? Because
he's using Logic now.
Oh, right, because I still use GarageBand. So I'm on a laptop that's like 10, 15 years old or something, just waiting for it. So that would be the end of my life. That would be the end of my life if that stopped working, because I wouldn't know how to use a new one. So I'd be on that, and there's loads and loads of stuff that I've saved that I can go back to and work on. And then the process of, I'm rambling now, but the process of writing songs is, the music I find really easy, but the words, I can be singing 50 times, one take or one sentence, and then you're pulling your nails out, you know, it's and then you think, but you know it's good enough and you want to carry on and do it. So I rarely get to that phase where I think, oh, fuck it, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I do push through, and that's where the hard work is, I think, the only bit of hard work. The rest of it's pleasure.
Yeah, yeah, I find it I find it very similar. So I can easily sit and come up with the new musical idea and work on that. And yeah, I just realise I just have to sit there. If I just sit here for enough hours, I will finish words. Words will sort of form and coalesce, but only if I sit and do it. And that's what I always say to people, like, inspiration finds you working is my favourite quote. It's a Picasso quote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, brilliant. Like, yes.
He was a grafter as well, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
It doesn't just happen to you.
Yeah.
It's not a flash of inspiration and suddenly this fully formed thing is there. That's just wishful thinking. So there is work involved, and it doesn't make it less special or magical or even more explainable to say it's work. I don't know how I do it. You don't necessarily know how you do it, but it's just a repetition of it. Mm. I mean, and for you, like, a lot of repetition. What was it, 130 releases in the last 10 years? It's a bit excessive, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
What are you doing?
I mean, I think the hardest work is now I'm doing these little heart boxes, which are these little boxes, and inside they've got a USB stick. And I've asked people to send me their titles. I'm going to write a piece of music to it. So that is the hardest work. But I explained to them I'm not going to write lyrics, because I think writing lyrics to someone's title, that's not personal. It should always come from the person that writes the title. I'm not going to write lyrics around various things. And so that's been really, really hard work. So that's like a job.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do it ever again, because I can't wait to get on and write my own stuff. But that's like a job. So I do, yeah. You know, and having to do adverts, the odd advert. I got an Audi advert once. I didn't get it. I never get these adverts, but it said, can you make a piece of music out of car noises? So they sent me thousands of car noises.
Wow.
And I had to try and put it together. I thought it was really good. I cheated a bit and put the odd loop in there, but tried to hide it. And they just write back and say, no, it's not what we're after. And then they work with a piece of classical music. So
that's too open, isn't it? I recently submitted some ideas for a Guinness ad, and I didn't for a second think I was going to get it, because it's just too good to be true, like that would happen, honestly.
They're brilliant ads, aren't they?
Yeah, they're great. They're really great. But I just used it. I was just using it as just an idea springboard. Mm. It's just an excuse to write to a brief for a day. I had a great day.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to get used. It's fine. And then I came up with a couple of things I might make into songs. So it's never wasted.
Oh, no, of course. No, I'm exactly the same. Never throw it away just because it's for a brief or something. But you're talking about Picasso. I mean, I get addicted to a lot of BBC Four documentaries on Rembrandt and Leonardo and stuff. And how much a lot of the great painters, it was a business, and they would have people in their studios to do reproductions. So it's like a business. So nothing's really changed. There is that. It's not just they're painting great paintings. There's a whole business head as well. And I think that's fascinating, because the business side of what I do is atrocious, really. It's just releasing too much music without any promotion, apart from on social media, which doesn't work for me. So,
well, I was going to ask you about your Twitter marketing strategy, because it's quite something.
I hate Twitter, particularly now, because it's the home of racism. I mean, it's just like I shouldn't. My manager told me to do it, and I remember exactly where I was. We'd had a load of logs delivered for our fire, and the bloke who delivered it just put it on our front drive, and I had to spend 2 days with a wheelbarrow taking it round the back where we were going to store it. But he told me then, you know, this Twitter thing, and obviously I hadn't done it, been around for whatever, but he said you should try it, and I tried it, and from that point in you're reeled in, and you try and leave it alone. But you know, with everything now, with all the football abuse and stuff that people are getting, it's just, I just feel a bit guilty for using it, but I don't use it in the proper way anyway.
Well, that's why I was like,
I think people probably think I'm really depressed, but I'm not. I'm just trying to wind people up a bit to get a response.
I find your Twitter feed hilarious.
Oh, okay.
It's so funny.
It scares people up, but yeah.
Perhaps, yeah. I'm obviously joking. I don't think you should have a Twitter strategy. I'm just thinking it's fucking brilliant what you're doing, because it's, why not? Like, it's just chaos on there anyway, so why not just be chaos? That's what I think you are on there. It's kind of wonderful.
Well, my kids have more followers on every platform than I do now. So because that's, you know, that's the, they know how to use it, they're savvy to it, and that's their life. But I just keep having to remind Gabriel, my little boy, I keep having to say to him that if daddy had had this 20 years ago, he would have had millions of followers. Well, that's me. That's me being really big-headed, but round, ugly, beautiful, and all that.
Yeah,
period.
Of course.
I think I might have had followers. So I say, yeah, daddy's done that. It's finished. I've moved on.
Have you ever asked the children to share your music on their platforms to get some sales?
Well, my little boy sings. He sings, so he does his own stuff.
Oh, cool.
Not in a professional way, but he just puts stuff up and he gets likes here and there. And Delphi plays the piano as well, but no, they actually like what I do. They've been to the gigs. A lot of people think, you know, dad's a fucking idiot, but in you know, dad dancing and all that crap. But at least I've been on stage and they've seen that maybe I'm a little bit, you know, I do the odd occasional good thing when I'm out of the house on the stage.
It must be so strange for kids though to sort of have an idea of their parent as a separate adult person that's not just dad or mum or whatever. Yeah,
I always remember, because I've always tried to hone it down, the kind of banter and all the whatever between songs and stuff, but my son just staring at me like in horror at something I just said, and he was right in the front, and I just, that's always in the back of my head that I should just concentrate on singing, that's what people want to hear. But I really struggle with the live element of you being above on a stage and people down below. I find that a real problem, that you get put, the Bono kind of thing where you get put on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And I'm quite shy really, so it just all comes out in that point. And you know, I've been in theatre groups for 10 years, so I know what performing is, wide eyes and, you know, doing all the business, but I just still know that I don't feel comfortable above people, or so I ramble on and I do ridiculous jokes and I swear too much, and that's just nervousness coming out really, exploding.
I couldn't tell if it was just your thing, because we did, what was it, 4 or 5 shows together a few years ago.
It's become my thing.
Yes, my clearly thing. But I definitely got the impression that people were there for all of the stuff. They just want you, so, and whatever you are presenting is what they're there for, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Apart from one of the nights, I think it was the London gig, and I was like outside by the merch and whatever.
Yeah.
And this guy actually just came in to see You're Gorgeous and then went.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me? That you've spent money to just like that. Why wouldn't you think that someone who's created that song that you love so much wouldn't also have lots of great other songs? Like, they don't just have one good one and the rest is shit. So why on earth would you just dip in like that? I found that, I've never seen that before. It was really weird to see.
It can be seen as a good, I've been talking to a guy who might help me out with some various stuff, because it's just been me for ages, but he's a really good bloke, and he would maybe act as an agent probably and try things. But he says there's such a story to tell, because everyone goes, You're Gorgeous, and they might not even know the band. You know, if you're in a taxi, they might not even know anything. But that's a lot of power you can use, because there are so many stories, you know, that I've done to be utilized. And I think that's what we're going to try and do, just to move. That'll always be there. It's not like, oh, he's just written this one song. If you know what I mean.
No. Well, yeah, you're not. Yeah, like there's this sort of the one hit wonder idea.
Yeah.
By the way, I know it's not the only hit you have had.
Yes.
I know it's not that. But just that idea that, oh, I know that one song by that band, so they probably only did that one song. It's such a funny, weird, limiting idea.
I've grown to realise now that it's, you know, I used to hate that song and then I'd like it again and then hate it and whatever. But it's the business thing. I made money off there, so I still get PRS for that.
Yeah.
So I can still afford to go and roughly do what I want to do without any pressure.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it now, the cash cow. There's lots of other things. There's the F word and various other things that have been used. But I'm so incredibly lucky. I mean, that's just... I know most bands starting and trying to get things, it's almost impossible to get off the first step.
Yeah.
So I'm extremely lucky.
It's a very different culture now, in terms of like having one hit that can help you do everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was going to ask you about your current relationship with that song, because Miles Hunt from The Wonder Stuff talks about being the custodian of the songs that you create. And that idea actually comes from Tom Robinson telling him that that's what he is. So that's quite a nice thing.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Miles has then done collections of his songs called The Custodian, because it's about a song as if, you know, obviously you make the song, it's only there because you made it. Or you could say it's come from the universe, or whatever ways that songwriters describe how songs come to them. But then, of course, it goes out into the world and it becomes the song that someone plays at their wedding or funeral, or in your case, both, for some reason.
Yeah.
For that one song has quite a lot of range.
Yeah.
For some
reason. Don't play it at your wedding. That's a bad idea.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. So I was just, yeah, I was just wondering how you feel about it in terms of like, is it your song? Does it belong to the people?
Yeah.
Do you hate it currently? Or like, how do you feel about that song right now?
Yeah, just avoid doing the R. Kelly thing and saying it's come from God. If you just avoid that, I don't understand that. Custodian's weird because I've sold my catalogue, so it's gone back to my publishers, which is a lot of people are doing it. You know, Dylan's doing it. I'm sure he got more than I did, but Custodian's like it's a very I don't know. I'm just thinking of custard creams for some reason when he said that.
That sounds
No, well, you are, aren't you? But I think possibly having so many songs that I don't even remember. Some guy did a compilation. He sent me 10 compilations of my Black Reindeer and Bandcamp stuff. And I put them on and it was like listening to a different artist because I didn't remember making a lot of those songs. So
yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't use the word custodian. I completely understand what Miles is getting at and Tom Robinson, et cetera. But I just think, I'm certainly not precious about them at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love listening to them. And I just think that they're stuff I've done.
Yeah.
So unprofound, isn't it?
That's fine. The profundity can come in the songs, can't it?
I think it's the obscure songs. There's a song which is called A Conversation with a Bear About Pain, which is a backward voice that I've done. It sounds like a bear and a man having a conversation.
Yeah.
Now, it's the most uncommercial piece of music, but you could hear it on a film. It's like a film soundtrack. But it's really, really beautiful. And I have an out-of-body experience with those kind of songs, and I listen to them as though it's not me. But when you put my voice on, you've got an instant connection. And also when I hear my voice back, if I was to listen back to my voice now, when you're talking, it's okay. But you listen back to your voice, you think, oh, my God, is that my voice? Everyone thinks that, don't they, if they hear their own voice? But when you're singing, it sounds like someone else. So I would say I'm not custodian of that voice, but it's like being able to step out of yourself and listen to it. And I think if you're producing your own music, then you're two people. And I believe that through life anyway. I believe the little boy that went to New Zealand on a boat isn't really me. It was someone else or, you know, whatever I've done or that 1996 You're Gorgeous time. I don't have memories of that really, so that's like another human being. So I think that's the way I do music. I'm step out of myself and go, oh yeah. God, that's interesting music, I wonder who that's by. So it's that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, I was listening back to my third album yesterday because it was the 5th anniversary of putting it out, and sometimes you just have to celebrate some shit.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
so I thought, let's celebrate this. And I listened back to it and I just thought, God, I mean, I know it's me, I can hear it's me, so I know it's me, but it's such a different person than I am now.
Mm.
And I'm so glad, because she was really very sad and had gone through a lot of awful shit. And it's just nice to see a progression. I like being able to see that things have moved onwards and forwards. Mm. So that was really, it was nice, but it was a bit weird.
And she makes war. So yes. Do you feel like that's not you?
Oh, no, I do feel like it's me, but it feels like a me from a long time ago, even though I only ended that 2 years ago. A year and a half ago, something. I just think that we're able to probably, because songs are kind of like snapshots for me, they're snapshots of where I am right at this moment, or not even necessarily me, but it's what I'm thinking about, or the things, whatever's coming out that day. It doesn't define me as a person forever. And that's why I changed my project name, because it's like, I don't want to be defined by this one thing. I mean, similarly, you did that with Black Reindeer, and you seem to sometimes want to distance yourself from the baby bird name. And sometimes not.
Yeah. It comes back to that. I think the problem with Baby Bird is it's always Baby Bird. If they do know the band, then Baby Bird, You're Gorgeous.
Yeah.
That's the connection that sometimes isn't very useful.
Yeah.
If it was Baby Bird who did Unlovable, or, you know, that would be a good thing. And distractions come along, but then it always goes back to You're Gorgeous. You know, it's like Prince William was playing it on a, on some news thing. He was like trying to scratch a record or something, you know, like DJ. But it was actually not that bad. But then it pops up on Barack Obama on Newsnight. So it's like, I know I'm never going to get rid of it. It's going to be there. But it's so inappropriate to play it over Barack Obama. Yeah, it's not really words that would suit a great man like that. So it's weird how people choose it. But, you know, it keeps getting played, you know, it keeps getting played. So I don't know why I've gone on to that, but that wasn't your question.
No, it's interesting. I think it's really interesting, because I don't want to, I'm trying to respect the fact that you have this massive amount of other songs you've done. Mm. It's just that obviously people listening might only know you for that song. And the reason I want you to be on here talking about other things is because I want them to know you've done other things. There's loads of other things. You know, an artist is not the one song you've heard. They're everything else and probably more besides. Mm. But it is interesting because it's from a very different time when you could have a giant hit like that, that then would make money. Whereas I think if you have a giant hit now, it's a very different situation. You might not be remembered for it. It probably won't get played on the news.
Yeah.
It's a very different time that we're in.
It's true of all artists. I mean, Bruce Springsteen is going to be Born to Run because that's a very misunderstood song. So you could take any big artist. They're always going to be, for the normal man and woman, that will be Bruce Springsteen. Didn't he do Born to Run? So
yeah.
I know on a higher scale, it happens the same. You know, it happened with I mean, Prince is probably a different example because he did so many different things and he got respected for different things, and Bowie. So you create, I guess you do create, it's an old idea to create different, you know, Ziggy Stardust and different things. So it's just a normal thing to do. But mine's on such a tiny scale. It's like, you know, I have a very faithful band of people who are prepared to pay a little bit more if I design the sleeves and I make it for them and I sign it to them and I do artworks for them. That's hard work, but it's like they are engaged in that. And I could always do with more people, but I'm at the point where I can't do anymore.
Yeah.
Physically going, we've talked about this, about drop and go, going to the post office.
I was giving you lots of, for people listening, I was trying to give Stephen some advice about drop and go at the Royal Mail post office.
Yeah, it really helped. Yeah. The fact that I didn't have to queue and I could just drop it off. That was such a great feeling.
It is really good.
I was inspired that,
My local post office, right, so we've lived here for about 2.5 years. When we were viewing the house, I actually made a point of going to make sure that the nearby post office would be sufficient for my needs, because I do things the same way you do.
Yeah.
And I actually was like going out of my way to say, oh, hi, good morning, how are you? Which I would have a chat anyway, but I just knew that we needed to be friends, because there's going to be times when I turn up with like 200 things in bags and just dump them by the counter. Yeah. And they're the ones who said, you should really get a drop and go card, because that'll be much easier for both of us. And so I did it. So I'm glad that's working out for you.
Oh, yeah. I went through horrendous before drop and go of like having to do that. And you're just thinking, oh, right, it's empty. I'll get in there. And then you're there and you're on your 100th thing that has to be done separately. And then there's a massive queue and I'm just going bright red. But I've had really good conversations with post people serving. Fantastic. But people's dad was an opera singer in Ukraine. It's like fascinating. But are you in the middle of nowhere? Are you
No, we're in northwest Bristol, in what was a village called Shirehampton, and it says Shirehampton Village, but no, we're completely connected by roads and things to Bristol, and it's just a local post office that is small.
And they do drop and go, because I fell out with my luck. I have to go elsewhere because I fell out. I got very angry at the post office because it says drop and go, but they weren't prepared to do it. Some of them don't want to do it. Do you have to do it after work? So I had a bit of a shouting match. I've never been back.
I had that problem in my last place, and I would just drive to different ones and just do like
different jobs.
And the same thing as you, like if one person came in and there was a queue of one person, I would just start apologizing. I just feel so bad about it. But really, we're like, it's just the service we're paying for. Like, we need to get the stuff to the people somehow. That's how it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Might not sound glamorous, but sorry, you know, the record gets put in the envelope by someone. And in this case, it's me or you, isn't it? So
there is hard work there. Before drop and go, the last thing on this fascinating subject is that if there were queues, I would like take 10 to one post office, be too embarrassed, go to another one, give them 10, because I was embarrassed to do that many.
Yeah.
But the bane of my life now is customs.
Yes.
You have to write them out in capital letters, and it takes forever. And I can't remember what writing's like. I don't write. I think that's the only writing I do, probably.
Yeah.
Just signing the odd signature. But
Brexit has been a nightmare for us in terms of like delivering stuff. It's really, really bad. So.
Pain in the ass.
Anyway, pain in the ass. That wasn't on the side of the bus, was it?
No.
Musicians, you'll get to write lots of labels out now. Yay. Great.
Exactly.
On the subject of being misunderstood or having songs misunderstood, does that bother you at this time in your life? Because We've alluded to the fact that You're Gorgeous obviously has been incredibly misunderstood and used in really strange, different ways.
I think the Bruce Springsteen thing made me feel better on a huge scale that was used as a pro-army song when it's quite clearly not. You hear lots of, probably every Bob Dylan song has been misconstrued by someone, you know, it's like if you go back to the 60s. Probably in 97 or 98 people would come up. One girl actually came up to me and she just sung me the verses to make a point that she understood it. That's one of the only rare times after a gig. That's one of the rare times someone got it. But you get invites. But can you come and play at our wedding? Just an acoustic guitar, and they're very, very instructional. They tell you we'll give you £50 to come along and play on a guitar, and you just write back and say no, I need 100,000. So you just put them on. And then you get rid of them. But if you're going to ask for You're Gorgeous to be played at your wedding, you know, if it's a pointing song like a lot are, you don't want to be pointed at and said You're Gorgeous because it's a loosely sarcastic comment.
Yeah.
I've always been anti-male on a huge scale ever since I went to college in Nottingham, gangs of men, you know, in wandering around when I was like a young 20 years old or something. So I've always hated that side of men. So, and that was the reason for writing that song. You know, I'm never going to be asked to, like the song says, be lie on a bonnet of a car in Speedos and sell a product, am I? It's just not going to happen. So that's all that song was about. And I thought it's quite basic, really. I think if you really have a look at it. But a pop song is the chorus, you know. If you can hear the chorus and the drums in your car when you're driving, that's apparently all that's needed, I was told by a producer.
Yeah.
Way back. Maybe a bit of bass so you can follow the tune. So that's it.
Well, definitely works for that song, doesn't it?
I think all the songs I've written, some of the really serious ones are the ones that get people, you know, when we do gigs like Back Together, it's like there's no irony in there. That's very strong. Or Bad Old Man, you know, it's an out-and-out political with a little P song, which should hit people in the chest, really. So if I hadn't written songs like that, or if I'd written You're Beautiful or You're Pretty, then I would be in trouble if I was Marty Pello.
Oh, God, I used to love Wet, Wet, Wet so much, though. Like, I could probably sing you most Wet, Wet, Wet songs from start to finish because my parents had that in the car.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that and Cher.
Cher. Upbringing. Well, I got you, babe. I've done a covers album, and I've done a cover of that. And I know it's not the Cher you're talking about on the sitting on the warship. Is that the famous one? What's the one where she's on a warship?
I don't know.
And she's got the gun between her legs. It's hysterical. It's so camp. It's ridiculous. I love Cher's voice when she was, you know, Sonny and Cher, even though he was a bastard, but.
How do you feel about playing live? Because you'd taken a bit of time off it, and Tim, my wonderful husband, was, I hope, partly responsible for a good experience of coming back and doing some gigs.
I think people pop along, like all the way along my career, you think there's been a couple of years, nothing's really happened. And then, Tim, you know, came along and he said, do you want to do some gigs? And it was, I didn't ask him. He came to me, which is fantastic. I don't know how we met, actually. Well, we met, all three of us met, but I think I'd met Tim before that.
Yeah, so he had promoted you years before at the Fleece, where he used to run the bookings at the Fleece.
That's right. Well, there you go,
And when we got together and I remember spending a lot of time in our old kitchen talking about Baby Bird's back catalogue and playing all the stuff. And I think it was Back Together we just would watch over and over and over again. And then he was like, I think I'm going to ask him. And it was like, you should. And then he did. So, yeah.
Well, it's brilliant. I love it. It's incredibly rare for people through my career. There's the people that have helped things and record company people, but they're doing their job. And I think, you know, Tim's doing his, everyone does their job, but it felt like very few people that actually want to help you for a good reason. And Tim did that. I think it's a love-hate thing with live. I really, really miss it now. I'm desperate, absolutely desperate to. I've even asked Tim, and he's prepared to do another tour, maybe at some point, maybe in 2024, whenever gigs are allowed.
Yeah.
But people are gigging in May, so I don't really understand.
Are they?
Yeah, I think surely they'll be cancelled. They have to be cancelled. It's too soon. And I don't think I'd feel comfortable. I don't know how I'll feel when I've had my second jab. I might think, yeah, right, let's get gigging.
Yes.
But you know, it's irresponsible on a lot of things. But yeah, so I don't. It's the talking with the audience that happened when we first started. We did a residency at the Splash Club, which was in the Gray's Inn Road in London, mm-hmm. and I think we did one for 4 or 5 weeks every Saturday or Friday or whatever it was, and people were sat down the front because we'd had all this press, which was in the NME top 10 and stuff. All the lo-fi albums did really, really well. So we had all these people gathered, young people as well, which I was amazed. They weren't my age. And I started quite late. So we built up this really big thing. And so you would just talk to people. I would just, if they're right down here, sat here, just have a chat. And then it would get, sometimes people would shout stupid things like they do. And like a comedian, you get that said back to you.
Yeah.
So it was it's finding a fine line between it getting friendly and they know it's a joke, and I think they do know it's a joke and they expect that, but as long as the music, you sing the songs as best you can, which sounds really shit. Oh, just sing that song the best you can, brilliant as you can, so you're not ripping them off by,
yes.
And I think we're also famous for stopping songs and then starting them again if someone made a mistake. It's like Marky Smith used to do that. He would go like take the drummers, it's instruments away, you take a cymbal away and then a drum away if he was pissed off with it. We never got to that point, but I think so. That's my love hate thing. And obviously if your voice cracks during I just hate that so much. I just feel like I'm ripping people off if I can't sing the big high notes, and of course,
right, okay,
a lot of Baby Bird stuff is tearing your throat out. Even now I can feel sore throaty, just psychologically.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic. But now there's been a gap. I think I can't think of any better way than doing gigs now, just to kind of celebrate.
Yeah.
It would mean much, much more, I think, after everything that everyone's gone through.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that it's good that people are being positive and trying to plan stuff. So I'm not dissing anyone who wants to play gigs in May. I think that's wonderful. I hope they can happen. I hope that can happen safely. I hope that if they're not going to be safe, someone, i.e. the government, will take responsibility for stopping them. And then we'll also support the venues who need to keep going in some way, because the venues are in this really awkward position and have been from the start. So I do want to stay hopeful about gigs and stuff, but I'm finding it hard personally because I haven't had any jabs at all yet because I'm so very young. I have to wait. Anyway.
Well, I've only had mine earlier because of my heart, because I had a heart attack. So that's the reason I had it, but I'm probably old enough to have it anyway at some point. But it's good. You get good stories like the Deaf Institute got rescued recently. It was probably a year ago.
I'm going to find it very hard when things are, inverted commas, okay again, whenever that is.
Yeah.
I'm going to find it very hard to go from this state where I feel safe and like I'm,
yeah, sorry, totally.
I'm controlling my environment. I've chosen not to do any gigs, even if they're offered to me. Mm. I've chosen this and that and the other thing so that I am safe and my family is safe. And like you're saying, aren't we lucky we can still keep making music and stuff? So I'm not reliant on a job where I have to go somewhere. So I do appreciate I do appreciate that stuff. But like, I'm going to find it very hard to integrate back into, inverted commas, normal life because I'm super jumpy. If someone comes close to me, I'm just like jumping across the road to get away.
Yeah. I'm totally the same as you. But I've had my first jab, and it does. Because you've waited so long, I would always the person that would go onto the road and let people pass.
Yeah.
Particularly if it's like three people, they don't know what single file is. This sounds like a real grumpy old man thing now. But now I will stay on the pavement. So I think why not? And as soon as I get my second jab, my life has to change in some way. But I'm not going to be doing anything irresponsible because, like you, I do feel like, because I'm older than you, that I might lose 2 years of my life. And when I get to my age, I kind of want to travel. I really miss doing city breaks. And I'm lucky enough, you know, I know most people can't. But then you think of people that are on their own. And my parents, my dad's very, very ill with Parkinson's and cancer as well. And I haven't seen them since the beginning because they've been isolating. And, you know, it's a... Just weird, and the juxtaposition of these people that it's not that hard to isolate. I mean, hopefully it will end soon because it has been a long time.
But very long time. Yeah.
I don't think you're not being told to, I think in New Zealand, weren't they told to stay in their houses and maybe just go onto the front to do exercise? We've never had that. We've never been told, unless you're told to isolate, we've never been told we can't go around the block.
Yeah.
So but I'm lucky I have a family, you know, you have Tim and your dog, and there's something, and I do think of the people that are in a, you know, without a garden and just like on their own, and it must just be absolutely horrendous. So. And I don't know why these people that are breaking the rules, they don't even think beyond their own noses.
Exactly. And that's what frustrates me about it so much. Yeah, because I've found this incredibly difficult, but I also know that I'm not in as difficult a position as you say, many other people. So, you know, we just all have to try and get through this. And we do have to understand that we are together, whether we like it or not. We're together with these people who disagree with us, unfortunately. So we need to find a way to navigate that. And Twitter's probably not the best place for it, if we're honest. But
no, I think about that every day, about trying to just come off that. It's an addiction. It's a total addiction. And it's you just want to have a little look, you know.
Yeah. And especially as musicians who want to share the things we do, because there's the slightest possibility that someone might click on the thing that you're sharing. Mm. And it's tiny. And if you look at the stats of it, it doesn't happen very much.
Yeah.
So you can spend quite a lot of time like sharing stuff and then have a look and go, oh, two people clicked that thing. So was my time actually best spent doing that? Or should I just be writing a song right now?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, Cal Newport writes really well about this stuff. If you've ever read any of his books, I mention him quite a lot because he just sums it up so well. I can't remember the phrase he uses, but just the idea that because there's possibly a benefit to using something, we spend hours on the fucking thing.
Like, yeah.
There's possibly a benefit to having your music on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. Let's spend hours and get really good at using that platform. But actually, that's not the thing that's encouraging people to listen. That's not how they're finding you.
Yeah.
But so coming from a system that you were in before where artists had very little control, if not no control over, you know, communicating with fans.
Yeah.
What's been the effect of the internet on your music career over time?
Well, it happened before. That's what's really odd, telling people that when did mobile phones even come into existence? I might have even been at 1996. So it was probably before all that. I think it's quite interesting because, you know, with Twitter and stuff, I know what you're up to musically.
Yes, of course.
Because you do good music posts, but I do silly things. I know that if I do music things, I think I would get more people interested. I know that in the back of my head. Don't make a political comment, Stephen. It's a bad idea. People don't like that. So, you wouldn't know anything. You would have to phone someone up, probably on a landline. So you ring your record company up or obviously use your computer. But I don't know.
And you'd never get any fan feedback, would you? Or did you used to get letters or anything?
Yeah, oh God, yes. I think it's probably genuine back then. You get a genuine Baby Bird fan or whoever. But now a lot of people follow you just because they're interested. You put a cat picture up or something. So you don't know if they're Baby Bird fans. It's very often you'd go maybe days without hearing from your manager but now you hear things all the time from whoever, and the communication's really quick and any time of the day, you know.
I think there's something kind of good about how like the communication is cheap, by which I mean it's like a cheap cost to the person. So someone can very quickly and easily say, I really love your song, Stephen, on Twitter, or I fucking hate you, what are you doing, to anyone as well. So that because it's like it's quite frictionless. Whereas in the old days, if they had to send a letter, like how many people now would go, I love that musician, I'm going to write them a letter and post it.
Mm.
I think very few, because there's so many quicker and easier and frictionless ways of communicating.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're doing. When I first started, so before Your Gorgeous and Ugly Beautiful came out, first proper studio album, I had the five lo-fi albums, which were printed in editions of 1,000. So the whole thing was, it started with I Was Born a Man, went through five albums to Dying Happy, and it was done over 9 months. So like a birth cycle, and in every single CD they would have a card. And you had to put a stamp. I think we might have paid for the stamp, actually. I don't know. But and then you would write your top favourite songs. And then we made a greatest hits, which only came out in America, unfortunately, for some reason. So I'm doing the same thing now. So I'm repeating that because I found all these lo-fi things that I wrote probably in the 1990s, before even the original lo-fi. So I'm putting a card in there, and they do have to put a stamp on this, and I'm sure they will, if they're going to thought it. So I'm doing a card, and they're going to write their favourite songs on there. So I just thought it'd be nice to see some handwriting, and then I can do something with that. So they'll vote their favourite songs. And so that feels like, I think we originally did that because it felt like a connection. Because it's a personal thing. You're writing a personal thing to the person you bought the CD off. But that happens with Bandcamp stuff anyway. I think it's all very personal anyway. I think most of the stuff I will write their name on whatever it is, and I give them little gifts and stuff. So until you ask me that question, I think yes, that personal thing is there, which doesn't exist in, you know, the influences of Instagram and all that kind of rubbish.
Yeah.
But I don't get a lot of hate on Twitter or Instagram. That's quite good. Unless I've got someone secretly filtering the mails. So I've never had any hate, which is actually something that just occurred to me. So that's good. Yeah. No retweets, but no hate. Well, very rarely hate anyway. But yeah.
I'm the same so far, touch all the wood.
I think also importantly to your question though, I think very much then you would go and see record companies. I don't know how it happens now. I don't know if you have to send stuff off MP3s and via email and stuff. But then we were actually going around to see record companies, and it felt a lot more. You went for your appointment, and it was, but people see that as old fashioned now, I guess. I don't know if that still happens.
I just think there's so much value though to when not in pandemic times, meeting people face to face. You get a sense of an actual person, not just can they write a decent email? Do I like this song? Because music is about the person who made the music. Or to me, I don't make non-commercial music, and you don't make non-commercial music, but we're not talking about like constructed, crafted pop hits. You know, we're talking about music that's personal, that comes out of a person, I think, is the distinction I'm making.
Yeah, there's commercial and there's catchy. I think commercial is a dirty word. So it's like, what's wrong with making a catchy song? I'd be criticised for you'll go, oh, it's so catchy and it's insidious and it gets in your brain. But that's lullabies. And I think, because I'm a very basic musician, I layer stuff. So I play a couple of notes and then layer it. I can't strum. I've met so many people. Oh, look, I can play the whole back catalogue of Oasis. I cannot play, even though I've done a covers album, I've just messed it up. I can't read the chords and do it. I get my daughter to do that. Actually, she does it for me. But it's lullabies. It's Three Blind Mice, you know, Twinkle Twinkle. It's, you know, those songs don't grow old. People are still singing them. And that's the whole point. So catchy, not commercial. Commercial is something that the record company goes, oh, that's commercial. You can do something with that.
Yeah. 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 And I think for me, like what I'm thinking about a lot at the moment is that when someone loves someone's music, hopefully they love the actual music, but it's about buying into the person. And I don't mean buying in a horrible commercial way. I just mean like you like that person, you like what they're bringing to you, whatever that thing is. And you probably can't explain what that is. But that's why people follow people online. It's not necessarily for the thing that is their life's work. It's for this person adds something to my collection of people online or whatever, whatever that is. So I don't think there's any problem with you being exactly how you want to be on Twitter at all, because it shouldn't just be, I wrote this song, listen to this. Yeah. It's boring. That's not how any of it works anyway. And the thing is, humans inherently have value outside of the thing that is their life's work or their job. So I hope that as a person, I have more to give than just some songs that I wrote. And when I look at your catalogue, and I've written like 12 songs that I'm putting out in May that took 18 months or whatever, and then another 6 months to release, like I'm well behind you in terms of your productive output even this year.
Yeah, but those 12 songs of yours are going to be really, really special, because I would like to have done that.
Yeah.
I think maybe because I started in music a lot older, I feel like I want to do things fast.
Right, okay.
But especially your sleeves as well that have a theme. You know, it's the same kind of designer, isn't it? I mean, do you do the sleeves?
No.
But that's the kind of thing you're saying about buying into. That's the kind of thing that grabs people's attention. And I would say you were doing it properly. You are doing it properly. And I'm just very much like a cottage industry, just like going bouncing from one thing to another, because I don't have any discipline. But I think that's something I admire.
Right.
You know, I like what you're doing, you know.
Oh, thanks. But I suppose, again, like, The point, though, I suppose, the laborious point I'm trying to make is that I couldn't be satisfied as a human, rounded human person to have just made 12 songs in the last 18 months and that's it. Please well judge me on those. There has to be more going on that's not necessarily within music or podcasting or anything. It's just like me as a person. What is my value day to day? You know, am I a supportive partner to my husband? Am I being nice to my dogs? Am I talking to my parents enough? Am I reading novels to expand my mind? Am I trying to learn about this and that and the other thing? It's not just about the things that we produce, you know, that the people see.
Do you pressure yourself a lot?
Do I pressure myself?
Yeah.
Did you say?
You've done a whole list of things. Do you feel like a big weight?
I don't think so, no. I try to make sure that there's like more going on in my life than is this song going to do something for me in my life, you know? Whereas maybe in my 20s, maybe I thought like at some point I'll get to a point where the world will tell me I am good at this in some way, which is such a pointless thing. But then we are all, I think a lot of musicians even now, even though the ways of producing stuff and releasing it has been changed for a long time, I think that there's still this thing of like you're trying to copy what the big boys are doing. So like the big bands have press and pluggers and this and that and the other thing. So we should all just copy that. We should emulate that because then we will be like them and we will be successful. But as we were talking about before, like the amount of clicks you get on something that actually take people to potentially buy your music are so small that you're spending your time in the wrong place almost. So that's why I think what you're doing is great. Like it's up to you how much music you create. If you think you're making too much, then maybe don't. But if you're happy with it, then at least you're spending time. You're not just fucking around on Instagram trying to be the best Instagrammer. You are making the thing you're supposed to make.
Oh, absolutely. Totally agree. But I also feel there's a huge, that pressure is always going to be there, the big boys or as you I watch Coldplay on TV doing gigs and think, I could have done that if I played the game a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay.
But then I weigh it up with the fact that I don't really think they see their families very much.
Yes.
It's like the U2 thing. They go away. Okay, we brought our family along with us for a couple of gigs, but you're away for a year and a half. So if I was to balance it up, I didn't miss my kids growing up, for example.
Yeah.
So that's what I tell myself, but I always would want more success again. Once you've had it before, I didn't enjoy the razzmatazz of all that, but I like people listening to my music. You know, why not? And you want as many people to do that.
Yeah, of course.
But you do hit a ceiling where you get to that, you get to that point where it's fodder, like Ariana Grande or something. I just think it's become something else, and it's all tied in with social media, and it's all the pop acts. It's like it's just mushy. And I know with things that are overproduced as well, if I listen to a Wham album when Careless Whisper and stuff, and I like some of that stuff sometimes, but you listen to it a couple of times and it's there's something about it like a taste of something which irritates you because it's so kind of round and polished.
Yeah.
There's no connection there. There's no kind of grit or... I'm talking about pop now, not talking about music I like, but something like that.
Yeah.
But you listen to probably an indie band or whatever or hip-hop or stuff. There's a gritty grind to it. Mm. And that's what I try to put into what I do. And that will always be not as commercial or as popular, I don't think, as... You have to play certain games. You have to produce it in a certain way, and being so all these things are in the back of my head, like saying you need a. You'll never be successful without a producer. Well, we had a producer, and yes, the album was successful, but it didn't really lead to great happiness. It just led to some money made mostly by the record company. So
yes,
that make any sense? I don't know. There's something an overly produced product doesn't have any character, basically.
Yeah, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And I think for most people, the connection with a song is the human voice you're hearing. And it's the character of that person, the personality of that person, whether they're singing lyrics they've written or not is, you know, debatable. Whether that's important, because I think you can very fully embody a song that you haven't written too. So there's different ways of doing the things.
Frank Sinatra.
Yes. Or Kylie Minogue.
Or Kylie Minogue.
Loads of different people. I fucking love Kylie. So
I wrote a song about Kylie.
Did you? How have I missed that one in all your thousands of songs?
Oh no, it's probably on this album I've got.
What's
here.
What's it called?
No, it's Lemonade Baby on our first lo-fi album. Okay. And it's just like Kylie. There you go. Anyway,
But when I listen to the radio, which is rare, I must say, when if I turn on Radio 1 or something, and I'm going to sound like an old grandma now, but because auto-tune has become an effect that people use on their voices in the same way they use reverb or delay, it's just there a lot of the time, not necessarily to tune vocals, but to give an effect. It's just a trendy effect. Mm. It sucks the humanity out of the vocal for me. Mm. And then I can't really, I just can't connect to it. So you could have the you know, the best melody in the world, and I'm not connecting because it's a robot singing to me, and it's just not for me. It's not to my taste. It's not wrong. It's just what is happening. It's not for me. So, and I don't want to make music that sounds like that.
No, totally. I listen to a lot of hip hop stuff, like Travis Scott and XXXTentacion. Is it that his name? And different things like that. But it's all auto-cued. And I used to like a lot of old hip hop, like Eric B. and Rakim and Public Enemy. And it does suck the soul out of it, because that's what current rap is now. It's just that. But I know you're probably talking about pop music in the way that it's all. I would like to use one though.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. But I would love to see what it would do to my voice, because I don't think it could cope. I've never used one. Wouldn't you be tempted just to see if you had like a little plug-in just to see what it sounded like?
Well, having brought it up, yes, perhaps. But I think because I know that the connection of the human, you know, the humanity
thing
important to me. No, I
totally agree with you. I'm just being silly. Yeah.
No. But I'm just saying, like, maybe it could be used, but in a way that some of the other vocals aren't also used that way. So it's a blend of stuff. And then maybe that would be really interesting. And maybe then it would happen for us both, Stephen, and everyone would love us in exactly the right way, buy all of our records in exactly the right quantities.
Exactly. Oh, perfect. Perfect.
And then we don't have to do anything anymore.
But I've got an album called Auto-Tune.
Okay.
Surprise. But it's not an auto-tuner. It makes, right. It does beautiful. I'll send you it after this. Gold Rabbit. I did a thing under the moniker Gold Rabbit.
Right.
And it does something to your voice that's in and out of tune. Mm. But I think it's more of a vocoder, but I called it auto-tune because it was like you're saying, it's like it's this disease of the music at the moment.
Yeah.
But no, I'll send you. It's really interesting. But what it does, it goes in and out of tune, but it creates something really beautiful on top of stuff. I'll send it after.
There's lots of cool shit you can do, but there's also lots of banal shit. And it seems to be that the really vanilla, unchallenging, banal, robot-y sounding stuff is what the mass amount of people want, which is, again, they're not wrong. If they want that and they're getting something from it, then potentially I'm wrong. It's just that I like different things and I want to make different things.
It's very Instagram. It's very, what are all the Boohoo and ASOS? It's all the music that's used on these huge clothing sites now. Yeah. So you get it on Instagram all the time, on TikTok. I mean, that auto-tune is TikTok, basically. And my kids are on that all the time. That's their thing. They don't listen to music or buy it. They listen to music, of course they do, but they never buy anything. And they've probably not paid for a single record in their lives, because it just comes off Amazon.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of that as well. I mean, I've got an Alexa and I can just say play the Velvet Underground and you know, it's on there. So I'm totally lazy when it comes to that. But yeah, it's just like Spotify, you know. I think I get absolutely thousands of listens a month, but I don't get any money from it. I don't think I've received a penny. No. So I'm living in this dichotomy of my kids don't pay for music anymore. And I don't think kids do. They don't need to. It's there. The TikTok generation. And then there's me that's not getting paid. So,
yeah. I wonder what's going to happen.
I might be more angry if I was 20, maybe. But then I wouldn't have kids past 20. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I wonder what's going to happen. It'll be really interesting to see in 5 years, 10 years where we are. Because there's some conversations going on about this, obviously, with different music bodies in the UK finally seeming to have come to the realisation that they have to do something to help us out with it. Mm. Whereas I feel like this could have been a conversation, surely, that happened 10 years ago, where the Musicians Union and so on are going, hang on, let's not do that, because that's terrible. So,
well, Taylor Swift did it, though, however many years ago, with Spotify. But then it probably sorts it out for her, and then it's left.
Yeah, exactly.
Various people have done it, but I don't see what's... you'd have to tell me. I don't follow the music business anymore, so
yeah.
I'm not even part of it, which is quite refreshing.
Yeah, I've never been part of it, but every now and again I'm like, am I supposed to be part of that? Or maybe not. No, maybe don't need to.
No, well, you're probably more responsible because it's relevant to what you're doing. I mean, maybe I should know more, But I think, again, because I've been doing it for a stupid amount of time.
You've managed to make it work for you, which I think is surely the biggest challenge. Because there'll be a lot of people who were releasing music when you started releasing yours who are not now making songs and selling them to people because they weren't able to keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I might have been lucky because I don't know what movements there are anymore, because you had punk, you had acid, you had, the Britpop thing, which we never were, I don't think, because Your Gorgeous became pop just overnight. Yeah. So, but it was part of a movement still. So you had all those bands, and that really, really helped. But I don't know what there is now. It's just wishy-washy US pop rubbish. So I don't know. I don't listen to Music 6. I'm showing my age as well, because I'd just rather put on Radio 4. See what's going on there. So I've no idea what Music 6 plays. So, but I know, it's a change thing, and I think you need to be part of it. Well, you did in the past, didn't you? It really, really helped if you were part of the punk movement or the post-punk movement. I know Joy Division, there was always a band to go and see, and now there isn't that sort of thing, doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it's like when things do come back, if people also have a renewed enthusiasm for, that freedom of being able to go and see a gig. But we joke in this house often about how, when gigs are back, maybe wait 6 months a year so that people can get all of their talking out before you come and perform in the same room. Because everyone will be very excited to be out and having a drink and seeing their friends, and that's cool and all. But I don't really want to be the wallpaper in that situation, because it's hard.
Totally. It's really hard. I feel really nervous about it as well. I feel exactly what you were saying earlier. I totally feel that fact that you are kind of in cotton wool a bit, and it's... I go out. I don't stay in the house. I need to go to shops and stuff. But it's still, weird.
Got to go down the post office, haven't you?
Yes, but I don't have to queue.
Look, I yesterday got in touch with you and I asked you to choose three pieces of your work to recommend to people listening. Yes. And I'm really interested to know which ones you chose and what were your parameters for those.
Well, I didn't want to pick anything obscure, because I think people basically just need to have a look at my Bandcamp, and it's difficult because I think people go, oh my God, where do I start?
Yeah.
But they are all listed under, Trucker, Arthritis Kid, and Black Reindeer. So they're all sectionalized. So you can go, and there's very much like instrumental music, classical, sort of neoclassical sort of stuff, and different sort of songs. I go from the basis that people only know, like we're saying, You're Gorgeous, really.
Yeah.
And I think the first one is the F word.
Okay.
Because it's been used on the Gordon Ramsay cooking show, because it's obviously the food word.
Yes.
And we also went on the National Lottery and performed that with Lulu introducing us. And they obviously realised it's not the food word, even though it's connected to that. So on the National Lottery show at 9 o'clock at night with Lulu, and we're doing the fuck word, was fantastic. And we wanted to wear Michael Jackson masks, but we were told we weren't allowed to. So we had to take those off. But it's one of those things. I chose it because I think it's a great piece of music. One of the hardest pieces of music we had to put together. It took on Pro Tools. It took forever to get the beat right. It was a nightmare. Even though it was a song that was written really quickly as a demo to produce it. That's why I don't like production all the time, because it didn't lose its feel. That's why we wanted to keep the feel of it.
Yeah.
But it was used on the Gordon Ramsay show for 13 series.
Wow.
And it never got a credit. And it was only right at the end that we managed to get a credit on the bottom. And that was the American show, because it went to America, and we actually got Baby Bird. So no one, this is a classic example of my career, no one knew. And it was used, Gordon was there and he was putting on his stuff, and it was all really integral. He was throwing knives at things. It was all really integral to the title music. And then it was all the way through the show as well. So it was like a big thing. We were so lucky to get that, but it was never mentioned.
That's bonkers. How? Whose fault's that? That's silly.
I don't know. So it's just down to me. No one will know, but I'll just be speaking to someone and say, oh, you know the F word. No, not blow my own trumpet, but we have this song. And say, oh, was that you? So that's been the catchphrase. Yeah. I think was that you? I think that's the biggest the sentence that's been said to me mostly. You're gorgeous, really. You wrote that. The lady in my local bakery shop recognized me from that in a big store. She said, I was going in to get a sausage roll before I got a bit ill, but I went in, it was full of people, and she had one of those paper hats on. It was before COVID, and she just shouted, "Your baby bird," in front of this thing, and I just went bright red and left the store straight away. But she was in her 70s. It was like fantastic. Aww, but I've since been in there to speak to her, so she's a lovely lady. Absolutely. But there you go. So anyway, the F word is yes. I think it's a good way. It's off Bugged as well, which I think is my favourite album of the studio albums. I think it's got some fantastic big ballads on it, and mm-hmm. The Way You Are and Stuff We Do Live. So yeah, that's one. And Unlovable, just mm-hmm. because that's a good way for people to get into Baby Bird. I'll be shamelessly commercial and say that. Shall I talk about it? Do I need to?
Yeah. Go for it.
Well, it's a song that was written with Johnny Depp, which people probably don't even know that, you see.
Johnny Depp was you?
Yeah, that was me. No, Johnny Depp was a great thing because he came along at the right time. Like I said before, that things have always come along, like Tim coming along.
Mm-hmm. My Johnny Depp.
After years in the desert of tumbleweed, then Tim comes into your life. So anyway, Johnny just suddenly became a fan, and I went to meet him, and we got a friendship from that. I'd seen The Libertine, which I think is Johnny Depp's best film. I think it's brilliant. At the beginning, he moves in and out. He's talking to the camera. And it's a classic case of a film that was binned by the film company because it was seen as a bit too unusual. So they didn't really promote it. So I understood that straight away from my stuff. So he moves in and out of the shadows. And it's a beautiful effect. So you can see his face, and then he moves out and he's gone. And it's beautiful lighting. So we chose that as an idea for it. This is after he played guitar on it in LA, and he put me in touch with Bruce, they were in a band together called The Kids with a Z at the end in LA, in Florida, when they were 17. So he put me in touch with Bruce, and then Bruce produced two albums, and then Johnny played on a couple of songs and did a video, which cost a fortune, and had a juice bar. And all these people on that he always works with, he says, "Oh, when we do other films, we don't get a juice bar, so you're very special."
Because you were paying.
No, I wasn't. Oh. He paid. No.
Oh, no way. Oh, it was a gift.
A gift from Johnny.
That's like, so nice.
Something like $1 million, if I'm I'm guessing. That might be a figure. I'm not sure that's not true, but...
Normally it's the label, isn't it? That's the thing. Normally the label's like putting on lavish things and then you realise you're paying later.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's nice. It's the other way around.
No, exactly. Yeah. But this is like as ever self-defacing as I can be. It's like the whole process was like I had a phone call with Johnny and he was saying, I think we want to take this Ambrose Bierce story where you're a soldier from 1860. So he wanted me to dress up as a soldier. Mm-hmm. I was kind of biting my tongue. All right, okay, I'll go with that then. So I was portly. I had like a waistcoat. I looked like a portly gentleman in it. And I was dyeing my hair as well because my hair wasn't white then, but it was like I dyed it and it was like out of a packet and it came out orange. So if you watch the video, the colour bits, I'm very, very orange. And just incredibly embarrassing, and a lot of the water scenes in it, I had to wear this really weird wetsuit, which had a little hole there so you could go to the toilet. So I've got these pictures of me in this wetsuit. It looks like a deflated Michelin man. It's hysterical. So all this, and then you have to anyway. You can see it on YouTube, but the whole thing is hanging and shooting. So it was in that commercial word again. It was incredibly uncommercial. It was his gift. He wanted to do it. So it did fuck all for my career, except a lot of people have watched it.
Yeah.
But then YouTube and Google and all the powers that be wouldn't play it. They wouldn't premiere it because it had shooting and hanging in it, even though he survives from that. Or does he survive? That's the twist. But that, I'm in front of Stephen Graham, acting in front of Stephen Graham, and I've done a bit of theatre in my time, but not proper acting. And it's like, there's Stephen Graham, and I'm having to, and my face is all, I can feel it all going like this, and I can't control myself. I'm trying to just look at him like this without like twitching madly or something. So the whole experience was brilliant, but it's a classic example of a lot of money being spent on something. It being really good fun, it being an art piece, almost. There's a 9-minute version of it, but commercially, nothing. So that's the story of my life, and it's good to look back on that and laugh at that, really. But a great song, you know. We do that live, and it's how lucky am I to have had that experience? You know,
it's really incredible. Cool. Yeah.
And there's a lot more stories like that.
I bet.
But yes. So that, do you want me to tell you the third one?
Yes, please.
I can tell you. I'm going on a bit.
No, it's fine.
No, there's a. I did a whole lot of songs. I think I've sent them to Tim, and I don't know if you heard them, but it was a King of Nothing thing, and I've released it quite a few times on my Bandcamp. But there's a song from that called Feel, which is like 6 minutes long, and it kind of. I love songs that start from silence almost, so it's like a tiny little noise that goes up like waves all the way to the top, like My Way by Frank Sinatra. If you listen to that. I mean, that just goes all the way to the top. And there's a Travis song as well that does that. And it's just extraordinary. One of their first singles is just amazing. So I kind of took that idea and did that with this. And you can get it on the Bandcamp, on my Bandcamp site. And it's just a big epic. It's almost James Bondy I don't like James Bond, but in a kind of, it has an epicness to it, but it also has the words kind of rip you apart as well, I hope. Yeah. It's like you're being... lyrically stabbed in a nice way, if that's possible. maybe a lyrical tattoo, I don't know, something that's not going to hurt you, but it's like it's like being blown apart and coming back together again. It's one of those songs that encompasses everything, I hope. But it's part of a load of demos I did, about 35 demos that I've released in different ways, and they've been on a few vinyls and stuff, but it's the one album that I really want to do justice to and do it properly, and maybe do it through Bandcamp on their vinyl thing. And actually have it there, because I'm playing a lot more vinyl at the moment, and I'm just even on this £50 thing that bump jumps all over the place, there's just something really nice about putting it on and hoping it won't jump, and just listening to it, taking 20 minutes, you know, of time to meditate again, like playing at the piano. I just think it's something I've tried to do. I've got one of those Himalayan rock salt things with some lemongrass on, and you just smell that, and it's as close to being a hippie as I've ever been.
That sounds good. I think there's something about deciding you're going to listen to something. It's like sitting down with a good book with nothing on, you know, not listen to the radio at the same time. Like, you wouldn't sitting to listen to music while you're working on a computer is very different from sitting down and listening to it. And so I think vinyl just, it affords you that time, because you have to sit down with the record player, and then you have to turn it over.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm all about CDs and cassettes personally. I've never been a vinyl head, but I understand that it's a similar thing. It's just about like the context of the listening. Yeah. Makes a big difference.
No, totally. I'm just listening to all my cassettes now with this lo-fi re-thing I'm doing, but no vinyl. I've never understood that passion. I've never had a big passion for vinyl. I used to buy singles, and then I used to sell them to buy Casios. You've got a picture of a Casio, which was my first Casio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the keyboard. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's where I wrote my first songs on.
Oh, and really?
It's got little presets, isn't it? I ripped off quite a few of the little demo tunes and made those into some of the songs.
Brilliant.
With the Kylie lyrics on there as well.
Yeah. The VL tone. It's brilliant.
Yes, it's fantastic. But lovely. Nice. I forgot what I was saying then, but yeah.
Well, that's all right. Well, look, we've had a lovely long chat, and I've had a brilliant time talking to you. Is there anything else you wanted to talk to me about or tell anyone about before we stop?
I've probably said too much, haven't I?
I don't know.
No.
I wouldn't say so.
No, that's good. No, just I always say to people, it's my little plug is just have a look on the site, you know.
Yeah.
There's free stuff on there. I don't ever expect people to buy stuff, but you can go on there, you can listen to it, and it's it won't disappoint, I don't think. I'm very proud of all that stuff.
Good. I'm really glad you are.
Even though I don't remember all of it.
And haven't you just released a collection of stuff? So you've made it a bit easier for people to get started, haven't you?
Yes, there's a... I want to do a proper one that's on CD. I think people... what I've learned from doing downloads is people don't want downloads. People actually want some plastic in their hands, which is my environmental discovery, that people want something tangible. So.
I think it's, again, it's that thing that then you can have that listening experience, can't you? Because the Bandcamp app is actually great on your phone. So if anyone's listening and they're like, oh, I've bought stuff on Bandcamp, but I don't know how to listen to it. There's an app. You can also download it and put it in iTunes or whatever. But it's really good.
It is brilliant. Yeah.
For if you're driving around and stuff. But yeah, I think people just, isn't it lovely that they want to pay you for something because they want to listen to your music with a bit more concentration?
Yeah.
That's a gift, isn't it?
No, I love it. No, that's really, really good. And they yeah. stick with it. They've stuck with it for 10 years or however long I've been yeah. doing it. So, good. But yeah, no, it's a good tool. It's a bit like when punk started. It's not quite the same, but it's the internet version of DIY. And it's yeah. really, really useful.
Yeah. Good. What's your next creative adventure?
Well, I'm doing these little, I know this is all on the, this is all on the radio, but these are the little boxes I'm doing.
Oh, lovely.
And it's like, it's
the heart
a little
boxes.
Baby bird heart on it. Can you see
that? Oh, yeah. Baby so it's a wooden box with a wooden heart.
Yes, which is going to irritate people because it's a USB, because it's not an actual CD, but I'm putting a CD in with it. But yeah, so that's, I've got to finish that. And it's, yeah. as you imagine, it's 60 pieces of music I've got to do. I thought, because I charged quite a lot of money for it, because yeah. it's, I'm writing them a song, and I'd researched yeah. that if you want Elton to write you a song, it's $1 million or something. Mental.
Right.
So mine's nothing like that. But it's 60 pieces of music. And I thought when yeah. I put it up, I just did it in a limited edition of 5 as a niche thing. And it went mental more than my other stuff. So right. it was, I thought, right, I'll put another five. Oh my God, I've got to write 20 pieces of music. And it was 30 pieces. So I stopped it at 60. So yeah. I've got to write those music. And I'm not taking old songs, I promise. I'm using all newly orchestrated music.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, I think some of the titles have been really, really good. But one of them, which is called Stuart Has a Small Willy. I'm not joking. I have to write a piece of music to that.
And you're not tempted to do lyrics for that one? Just
one. Yeah, I've got to button my lip. But I mean, he's put a big backstory to it, which is nothing to do with Willy's, but so I've got to go away and write a song like that. And then another one is for a 9-year-old who likes robots. So it's been quite stretching.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me. This has been lovely.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. Lovely.
I can't tell you how much it means to me that Stephen agreed to be my guest, and what a wonderful chat. Head on over to penfriend.rocks/Stephen with a PH now to dip your toe into his musical world. You won't regret it. While you're on my website, you can also find links to pre-order my new album Exotic Monsters, which is coming out on the 21st of May, very soon. And if you'd like to join James Everett as a podcast sponsor, you'd be very welcome indeed, and all the information is right there on the site. Thanks again to James for supporting this episode. I make this podcast for you, so I always love to hear what you've enjoyed. A really great way of telling me and helping the podcast reach the ears of more people in need of some creative pep is to leave a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts. Attention Engineer is taking a little break now, but I'll be back in a few weeks with a very special one-off episode, and then back again properly in June to bring you more conversations with some of my favourite creative people from around the planet. Thanks so much for listening today. Take good care. And I'll catch you again soon.